So, welcome to the latest edition of the Wolf Whistle Podcast. This week, we've got our ninth speaker, Paul Jones, midfielder, played for Wolves, very, very late 80s, early 90s, signed in November 1989 for £15,000, 15 appearances for the Wolves, and then left the club in May 1991. Good afternoon, Jonah.
Afternoon, Jace.
How are you, mate?
All right, thanks.
Good, good, good. In fact, I put it out on Twitter today, Paul, and I said, right, it's a midfielder from the late 80s, early 90s, and a couple guessed it was you. So, you know, and there was a few other guesses as well. And I was really pleased about that, Paul, because although you didn't make many appearances, obviously, people, the good thing is that they're actually still remembering you. Now, it all started, you're one of the few players that have come from Walsall to Wolves. Most players, it's the other way around. They play for Wolves and then they end up at Walsall later in their career. How did it all start for you, your sort of schoolboy football?
So I signed schoolboy forms at 14 for Walsall.
Yeah.
Then obviously apprenticeship at 16.
Yeah.
And professional at 18.
And, I mean, to be honest, you are a bit of a Walsall legend, if you don't mind me saying, over 180 appearances for the club.
Yeah, still go back now and still people ask you about that time, so it's good.
And locally born, Paul?
Yes, Wolverhampton.
Oh, so whereabouts Wolverhampton?
So, New Invention.
Yeah, no, so growing up then, who was your team?
Wolves.
Oh, was it?
So, yeah, for me to play for my hometown team.
Yeah.
Although not as long as I would have liked it to be, and more appearances, like you say, it was a dream come true, really.
So that's interesting because quite a few of the people we have interviewed so far have been lucky to play for the hometown club, but I didn't actually realise you was a Wolves fan growing up.
Yeah, I used to go and watch, obviously, Mel, Steve Daly, Kenny Abbott, 70s, time I went when I was at school.
So, obviously, you're watching them, you've mentioned two there, Mel Eaves and Steve Daly, and then you played with both of those players later in your career at Walsall.
That's right, yeah. And obviously, playing with Mel now and seeing Steve at a lot of the charity dues that he does, it's really good for me.
So you, initially, we was talking just before we started recording the podcast, you started out as a striker, didn't you, Paul?
I did in the youth team at Walsall, at first, and then just moved back slightly to midfield just to get a bit more involved and a bit more of the game.
Because you said you were scoring quite a few goals, wasn't you? And then David Kelly, another Wolves player, he popped up and started scoring a few more, didn't he?
That's it, yeah. I don't know what you can look back and think what might have happened, but he came and obviously never looked back, and then I just was known as a bit of a utility player then, from then on.
Well, I mean, that sort of followed you throughout your career. We'll come on to Wolves shortly. So, what positions would you have been playing for Walsall?
My debut, wide right. I played everywhere. Right back, centre back, left wing, up front. I even went in goal, Crystal Palace away, when the keeper got injured.
Okay.
Fred Barber. Yeah. They only had Ian Wright and Mark Bright up front.
So, oh, is that all?
Yeah, so it didn't do
too. Don't tell me you kept a clean sheet.
I did.
Honestly?
It was already 2-1 down, but I never lost any in, so I was delighted with that.
So, had you played centre midfield as well for Walsall?
Yes.
So you played pretty much every outfield position?
Yes.
And in goal? So what happened at Palace then? So how did you get injured, Fred?
I think it was a challenge. They just, it weren't planned, obviously, they just asked who'd like to go in, and so I just volunteered and
brilliant,
yeah. Came out, caught one, found $1 million when I come and caught one.
I bet you did.
But obviously, playing out, you just take it for granted, taking a goal, a corner or a free kick or anything like that, but when you take a goal kick and the fans start singing, you get a bit twitchy, which you didn't realise till you actually go in goal.
So like, obviously, so when so you're doing the run up for the
different
goal kick,
yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
So how many years was you at Walsall for, Paul?
Eight.
Yeah. And obviously, although Wolves were your club, Was it still a wrench to leave Walsall after sort of playing so many games?
I suppose looking back in hindsight, could I have stayed and got a testimonial? I don't know. But when it's Walls and, like I said, my hometown team,
yep.
I couldn't get there fast enough. I could have ran down. I would have played for nothing, to be honest.
Well, do you know what? It's amazing how many players who've obviously played for Wolves say that they would have played for nothing. I mean, I know any supporter will tell you that, but it's amazing how many players who'll say that as well. So, how are your family Wolves supporters as well, Paul?
Yeah, yeah. It's quite funny. My step brother had a season ticket away, and I always used to sit at the front of the couch by the driver.
Yeah.
Just enjoyed looking through the, and he was in front of me in one of the supporters' couch and was waving to me through the back window on the way home from one of the away games.
Oh, so great, yeah.
That was class, like.
And so you used to follow Wolves all over the country as well when you were younger?
No, I used to just go to the home games.
Okay.
Yeah, he had a season ticket with stepbrother.
Oh, got you.
And he used to go away as well.
And who was the players you revered when you was growing up, when you was watching Wolves?
All of them from that time, really.
Yeah.
Your Kenny Ibbotts, John Richards, obviously Dugan, Steve Kingdon.
Yeah.
They stood out. Obviously Mike Bailey with his, you know, barrel chest.
Yeah.
Steve Daly with his passing.
And obviously playing schoolboy football around that time, did you ever envisage that one day you'd be playing for Wolves? I mean, was it, yeah, I know certain players, you know, when they get younger, we've all got this dream when they play, but did you really realise that it was attainable, and did you really think you could be a footballer?
I did at school. I mean, that's all I ever wanted to do. I used to play every sport going at school, was captain of nearly every, you know, cricket,
round. She was a good all-rounder.
Yeah, so athletics, anything, but obviously football was the main thing for me.
Yeah.
Really sporty. And that was it, really. Just, like you say, it's a dream. And you just hope it's going to happen.
Yeah. So, after 8 years at Walsall, you got your big chance. It was November 1989, as I said earlier. You signed for £15,000. Now, Wolves then were newly promoted, so we'd won the fourth division, then we'd won the third division, and it was our first season back in, obviously, what is now the Championship. It was then still Division 2. How did you first hear about the interest from Wolves?
I'd heard the season before that there was little rumblings, but you know, obviously, nothing came of it. Being a local lad, and you hear different people, press guys, and things like that. And nothing from the club. So obviously, just carried on and tried to do the best I could and see what happened.
Yeah, and when did you first hear that there was interest? And you know, did you get down for talks? How did it all plan out?
We were in the Championship with Walsall, near the bottom. Ex-Wolves manager John Barnwell was the manager at the time.
Yeah.
He came in, said how much he thought I was a good player and that, and tried to sign me at Notts County, but when he came in, didn't play that much, which I found strange that he'd put that in the press. So that's the reason I went up. For a month's loan to Wrexham at the time.
That's it, because obviously that was before you come to Wolves. You went out on loan to Wrexham, which I found quite strange looking at it after you played, you know, nearly 200 games.
Yeah.
For them to put you out on loan.
Yeah. Like I say, Tommy Coakley got the sack. John Barmore came in. Like I say, said how much he thought I was a good player, and I thought, oh great, I'm going to have a chance, but for some reason didn't play that many games. So Wrexham came in, and I thought I might as well go and play for a month and see what happens.
And how did you get on down there?
All right, not too bad. I only stayed for the month. Big old ground, the race course.
Yeah.
It's a bit of tradition, yeah.
So what year would that have been?
That
would have been 88, 89?
Probably 89, yeah, just before I left to go to Wolves.
So was that the year they beat Arsenal? Or was that 91? Was that a bit later when they beat Arsenal in the FA Cup?
Yeah, I think that was a bit later.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, yeah. Dixon McNeil was the manager. Brian Flynn his assistant. With Joey Jones.
Yes.
Liverpool, yeah. Lovely, lovely, lovely guy, Joey. So, yeah, I enjoyed my time there.
Yeah.
But,
and would you have been interested in making that a permanent deal if you'd come up?
Not sure. I think they were probably a league below Walsall at the time. A big club.
Yeah.
But,
huge ground, isn't it? Racecourse
yeah,
ground.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Obviously, they used to play the Wales International games there. So, good crowd and good atmosphere. Good old big ground with a lot of tradition, like I say. But came back and I thought, you know, I'm going to prove myself and try and, you know, get back in the team. But still struggling to get a game. So I ended up putting a written transfer request in. And then that's when Wolves came in.
Okay. So you'd already expressed your wish to leave.
Yeah.
And then, so did Wolves invite you down for talks initially?
Obviously made the phone call to Walsall. Walsall told me of their interest. Like I say, Walsall, we were getting relegated. I think we were in the bottom three. It was towards the end of the season, out of the Championship. Obviously, Walsall had just come into the Championship.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
Such a big club compared to Walsall.
Yeah, I mean, even then, when you first got there, the Wolves ground was still a little bit, still very dilapidated, but you could see the potential of it clearly, and you could see how much of a, for want of a better expression, a bigger club than Walsall.
Oh, of course, yeah. They only had the Steve Ball, which is a now. That's the only stand that was there then at the time.
In the South Bank?
No, still the old one. Only the Steve Ball was
there. Oh, yes, sorry, as the new. And then you had the South Bank, the Terrace Inn open.
Yes, that's it.
And so, obviously, was Graham Turner, yes, he was a Wolves fan, but how big? So I know a few of spoke to Andy earlier in the week. He said Graham Turner was a huge influence on his decision to sign for them.
Well, I think more so for me was Gary Pendry, because I was at Walsall with him.
Yeah.
With Valen Buckley, and Gary was assistant. So that obviously helped me a bit, knowing somebody at the club.
Yeah. To be honest, we was talking earlier, you made your debut, you took a bit of a while to get into the side. I mean, obviously, in the what position did they sign you for specifically? You know, when during the talks, what did Graham say he wanted your position initially to be?
I think it was midfield initially, because that's where I played most of my games for Walsall. But obviously, they probably know that I played in different positions as well. Because when I made my debut for Wolves, I played wide right.
Yeah.
When I came on as well, so.
So your debut was Watford away. And then your home debut was against Sheffield Wednesday in the FA Cup, wasn't it?
Yeah. Bully missed a penalty. I did ask him whether he wanted me to take it.
Cause really?
I was the penalty taker at Walsall. That season I scored 13. But obviously he was the main man and he took the penalty.
Took it and missed it.
Yeah.
And we actually lost the game, didn't we?
Yeah.
And got knocked out.
Yeah.
So your first game was Watford away, you come on as sub. Your next game, your second game for Wolves, was also away. And I think everybody who listens to this podcast, all three of them, now, everybody who listens to this podcast will actually remember that game. Newcastle away, New Year's Day, Wolves won 4-1, Steve Ball scored all four. You come on as sub, didn't you, Paul?
Yeah, I think I come on for Paul Cook.
I mean, what was that?
Oh, what a day. One you'll never forget, really. Bully scored in four. The fans flying up on the planes for the first time. Just brilliant. Obviously, going overnight as well, it was New Year's Day, so we'd stayed away in the hotel. To get a day like that and Bully to score four and the fans to fly up and enjoy it that much. It was a dream come true, really.
And how did you guys get there? Because obviously all the Wolves fans are up on the budget airlines and I know the turnout was fantastic, all dressed as Father Christmas. So how did you guys get up there?
We went coach night before.
have been a nice 6-hour journey on a coach.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I've done a few Q&As with Bully and Tomo, and they told the story that, obviously, the night before the game, Graham Turner said, look, you can have half. Yeah. And I don't think he stipulated how many halves, and I think, to be honest, by their own admission, Bully and Tomo were a bit worse for wear, and they did have a few drinks. Now, obviously, that doesn't happen in today's day and age where people have a few drinks the night before the game. Obviously, they did. Wolves won 4-1, Bully scored 4. The rest is history. So the big question is, Jonah, did you have a drink the night before?
No, mate, no, not at all. Too new. I'd only just arrived, and I'd be too scared.
Yeah.
I remember they were telling us to go up about, I think it was about 12 o'clock. So it's time to go up now, and I can remember someone coming in and checking the rooms at about 12:30, 1 o'clock, make sure everybody was in there. And obviously the coaching staff stayed down then to see the new year in.
Yeah. So you didn't touch a drop of alcohol?
No, mate, coke.
I believe you. Millions, millions wouldn't.
I might have had a shandy.
Oh, here we go. You're changing now. Might have had a shandy. Yeah, there was a glass of wine involved. And so you're saying you was obviously a utility man at Walsall as well. So what positions did you play at Walsall? Because I don't want to say only. You've played 15 times in the old Golden Black, which is unbelievable. You know, it's just, you know, fantastic. So what position did you play in those 15 games? Because you played quite a few positions, didn't you, Paul?
Yeah, so my debut, I came on, played wide right against Sheffield Wednesday at home. The Watford game, I think I might have come on as midfield. I played right back as well.
Yeah.
Centre
back?
Yeah. I played one or two games.
And so in your time there, obviously you said, you know, you saw what a great club it was. You're playing for your hometown club. What was your relationship like with Graham Turner?
Fine, yeah. Bit of a disciplinarian at times, but would give you, you know, so much leeway. But
yeah.
Like you to work hard. And obviously play when you could.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought, you know, quite a good manager.
And did you get to meet the great Sir Jack Hayward as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Which was really good because obviously I'd heard a lot about him.
Yeah.
So it was nice to meet him.
And that's really when, obviously, the money started coming into the club and things changed very, very quickly. You know, like I said, 15 games. Have you got any regrets, or is there anything you'd have changed, or is there a reason why you don't think, you know, you did go on to play more games for the club? Is there a particular reason, or?
Not really. Obviously, if you have your time over again, I think people would do things differently, but a lot of people can say that. Got no regrets, like I say, because it was my hometown team, and it's a dream come true for anybody.
Yeah.
You know, like you said earlier, I used to stand there and watch on the South Bank. And although I thought, yeah, I've got a chance of being a footballer,
because
I was half decent.
Yeah.
When I was, you know, at a young age, never thought watching the players there that one, obviously you dream and you think, this is what I'd like to do.
Yeah.
And every time I went to watch, I'd think, I wish that was me.
Yeah.
So when it, you know, when it comes true, you know, like you said, if you're a fan, just to for it to happen was amazing.
So for you, it yes, 15 games, but it would have been for you really nice, wouldn't it, to clock? And I think at that point in your career, signing for Wolves at the time you did, I bet you thought you was really going to kick on with your career then as well, didn't you? Because people, I've spoke to people about you, Paul, and they said how skillful you was, how hard working you was. You know, did you really think it was going to work out and you was going to kick on?
I did. That was obviously the reason to go in. Bigger club.
Yeah.
Bigger ambitions.
Yeah.
Back in the Championship where I'd just come from with Walsall.
Of course.
Yeah, all that, but you know, unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. I probably had about another 15 appearances as sub as well.
Yeah.
So for me, that still counts.
Of course.
You know, a little bit. But of course, like you said, playing 180 games for Walsall,
yeah,
it would have been nice to have at least done the same. Obviously, he spent a lot more time at Walsall, but you know, he would have been nice not to have left after the 2-year contract that I signed and you know, signed and gone on.
And obviously, I asked this question to a few of the former players, not to the more recent ones, because they probably wouldn't answer the question. But what sort of money was you on at Walsall, Paul, if you don't mind me asking?
I was on £500 at Walsall.
Yeah, see, so, was that decent money back in the early 90s?
Probably, on hindsight, looking, you know, at the comparisons now to then, at the time.
Yeah,
I suppose it was not bad. It was more than I was on at Walsall anyway. So,
so you went for the money, basically. I'm joking. And was there win bonuses and that chucked in as well? And
yeah, and appearance money. Yeah, so, yeah. It's all.
Yeah. So obviously, I think part of the problem was towards the end as well. Walsall signed Paul Cook and Paul Birch, and they were good players, weren't they? I'm not saying it did get competitive in the Wolves midfield, didn't it?
Yeah, it was hard. Keith Downing as well. Everyone knows, you know, Psycho, his work rate, and Cookie had a great left foot. Paul Birch, obviously, very skillful player as well. So, you know, yeah, you was restricted a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think when you said earlier about being a utility can be a good and a bad thing. You can have a good game, which is what I found, and people whose position they normally play in there, you know, was first team players at that position.
Yeah.
As soon as they got, you know, fit again, you didn't seem to stay in there that long. I found it hard to cement down a place, even if you did well and the team won.
I think, yeah, it's exactly that with the utility. I think it's twofold, really. On one fold, you think you're going to play more games because you can play in different positions. But on the flip side, because, you know, you haven't got that one position, like you said, if you're filling in for someone, as soon as they're back, you're out again.
That's it.
So
That's how I found, that's the way it went for me, you know, a little bit. That's how I looked and that's how it seemed. But I suppose, it's, you know, it's great if you're on the bench because you can play for someone on the bench for the manager.
Yeah.
You know, and not having so many subs them days, it was great for them because if anyone gets injured, then you can do a job.
Well, that's it now. Now it's what is it, 5 subs, is it?
Yeah.
Or 7, is it?
Yeah, 7. Yes, I think
so you got 7.
Probably 3 then in them days.
Well, I think actually when you'd assigned, I think it was 2.
Yeah.
So for it was good to have you on the bench, Paul, with the greatest respect, because right back gets injured, Paul Jones can play. Centre back gets injured, Paul Jones can play. Centre mid, goalkeeper even, put Jonah in goal. I mean, what if you could see, if someone said to you, what was your best position? What was your position you was most comfortable in, what would you say it was?
Centre mid for me. Just I was comfortable on the ball and I could pass it. Not the quickest player. Thought, you know, I had a bit of vision and I could pass it and had a decent strike.
Yeah. And what was it like playing with at the time, you know, Steve Bull and Andy Much?
Oh, great. I mean, obviously, they were the assets of the club and we played to their, you know, you play to your strengths and that was our strength at the time. Bully just had that golden touch and he just couldn't do anything wrong.
No.
He'd shoot from anywhere and he'd go in. It was great for us. Yeah.
And did that take a lot of pressure off the midfield?
Yeah. Obviously, Muchie was a great foal for Bully. Play into Muchie and obviously flick-ons and he put Bully through. Obviously, Bully had closed people down. He'd work right, you know, closed defenders and get some of the goals himself, really, by his just his hard work.
Yeah.
Great times. Bully just got in the England team as well when I got there. I mean, no airs and graces about him. Took me a little bit under his wing, says, now you're in the team, stop in there now and
brilliant.
Just do everything you can.
Brilliant.
To stay in, which I found nice.
Because it was a bit of a transitional period for a lot of players. Because in the fourth and third divisions, really, the promotion winning seasons, we had a pretty much similar team. And I think it was when they got into the second division, the Championship, that's when they started bringing new blood in and new players. So it was a big transition for the club, really.
Yeah. Like you say, they were, you know, such a big club to be down at that level. That's where they should have been, really. So it was, you know, starting to get things back on the up. Where they belonged, and you know, the bigger players, and playing at higher level.
Yeah. Now, May 91, you got released. Where did you? I mean, did was Graham quite front? You know, quite upfront when he spoke to you about being released, or how did you sort of find out, Paul?
Yeah, obviously, calls you into his office. Just said he wasn't going to renew my contract. But he said, I think the last game I played was in the reserves against Coventry. He says, if you play like that, you should have no problem getting a club.
Yeah.
I should have asked him to help me get one there. Because I ended up going to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
But you had to be on a free.
Right.
They just lifted the embargo where they can sign more than four players. So I went out there with a few ex-Warsaw lads who I knew from my time there. Few bigger names, David Fairclough from Liverpool.
Super sub.
Yeah. Just to see, you know, if we could get anything out there. But
And it was, so did you actually sign for a club in Hong Kong, or was you just all on trial at different clubs?
Yeah, we were all on trial at it was like we played about four games.
Right.
We went for 2 weeks initially as like a trial.
Yeah.
Played four games. I scored in one. And just for putting yourself in the shop window, really, for clubs to look at you, but nothing come of it, really, which was a shame.
So you come back then, and then it's straight into the non-league, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
I found it hard to get back into the league then. I went to Northampton.
Did you and Colin Taylor go on trial there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was
the manager Churchill?
I think it was.
It
might have been Peter Morris, and John Barmore might have gone back there as well.
It's all right, yeah, because I remember Colin saying that there was an ex-Wolves player who was linked to Northampton. That's what helped you get a trial. I think Phil Chard might have been playing there, actually.
Right, yeah.
And then you and obviously Colin,
And I think Graham Turner's son may have gone there.
Turner?
Yes.
Yeah. So, how old were you at that point?
Probably 28, 29 when, you know, they say
you're at your peak,
yeah.
So 28, 29, you've literally spent the best part of three years in the Championship.
Mm.
So you would expect to get a club, even if it's Division 4, Division 3 then.
Yeah.
Which you'd have been happy with, wouldn't you, I suppose, a local club. And Northampton would have been a good move, because it's not far.
That's it.
But that didn't work out, the trial?
No, did pre-season, signed non-contract basis, could have gone there or Carlisle, and like you say, being local, I thought, you know, I could drive to Northampton. I share a lift with a few other players who I knew, so I plumped for that rather than the Carlisle. But obviously, in hindsight, it might not have been the right thing the way it worked out. Signed a non-contract basis because they had an embargo on them where they couldn't sign any players on contract. So I had a couple of months, and then that was it, really. Did a pre-season, and nothing really happened.
And then it was the next club was obviously sadly non-league. We'll say sadly non-league. It's still a good standard, Kettering.
Yeah, in the old conference. So it was one below the Football League,
Which is actually a very good standard.
Yeah, probably not as much, you know, then than now. Some big clubs at the time, like Kettering and one of the bigger clubs in the conference, a few good cup runs and giant killing. But compared to now, obviously, it's a lot of ex-league clubs in there, and most of them are full-time, whereas it was mostly part-time there. You just trained twice a week and played on a Saturday.
So did you had to get a job, I take it, then, Paul?
Yeah.
What was your first job after?
Well, I didn't get a job straight away because the travelling was twice a week and that A14 wasn't open then, so I had to go all the way through Market Harbour and that way, which is a bit of a trek, three times a week. So
flipping heck.
Yeah. I think the first job I had was just driving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And really, that had probably been about just a couple of years after you left Wolves.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's how quickly football can change during the Championship. I remember it from my season ticket, watching you playing, and then, you know, and then a year later, or probably less than a year later, you're driving.
That's it.
Is the transition difficult, Paul?
Oh, definitely. Obviously, the money was not too bad for part time, but if you get a job as well, obviously it makes your money up.
Yeah.
To a decent wage, but definitely when that's all you've done since you've left school.
Yeah.
For 10 years.
Yeah.
It does take a bit of adjusting.
And you're in the real world then, aren't you?
That's
you
know. Course.
So. Was there an opportunity to get back to Warsaw? Like I said, you played nearly 200 games there. You know, did you make a phone call? Did you?
Spoke to a lad named Paul Taylor, who was I think he was chief executive. I think, but I think Kenny Ibbitt would be manager then at the time.
Yeah, that's right.
Did ask the question, but no, nothing really, because I think Paul Taylor took over a little bit. After Tommy Coakley got the sack and before John Barnwell came in.
Yeah.
Didn't really hit it off eye to eye with him. So, you know, that was difficult trying to ask him to see if I could get back there. But
yeah.
No, nothing. Nothing happened.
And after Kettering, it was Chasetown?
No.
Oh.
Went to Stafford Rangers, who were in the conference at the time.
Stafford Rangers, yeah.
They were about third from bottom. Dennis Booth was the manager, Villa assistant. He took over at the time to try and keep them up. George Berry was there playing.
Flipping heck.
Nigel Callaghan,
ex-Villa.
Watford, England and Villa.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he bought us three in, try and keep them up, and we kept them up, to be fair, that season.
Okay.
In the conference. Then Dennis left.
Yeah.
So I then went to Hensford Town.
Yeah. Quite a few, I was speaking to Andy Thompson, quite a few players, Wolves players end up at Hensford Town.
Yeah. Yeah. John Baldwin was the manager then. Obviously not at the new ground that they're at now. It was the old Keys Park. But it was okay. It was local. And then just as I got older, I just seemed to go down the leagues.
Yeah.
All the local clubs, really. Bilston. Blakenall. I went to Moor Green for a while.
Pinnock. More clubs than Jack Nicholas.
I did, non-league.
And did you enjoy it in the non-league? Because, you know, I know you're a football man and you're still involved in football now, which we'll talk about shortly. Did you enjoy playing in the non-league?
I did, yeah. Obviously, coming out of the game, I didn't have much choice, but you have to adjust.
You do.
Like with,
you
know, work-wise as well as football-wise. Part-time is completely different to full-time.
And that's what... Because... You're playing this is the thing I just find mind-blowing sometimes, the fact that you've played at Newcastle away, you know, it's probably nearly best part of 30 odd thousand supporters in the stadium. You've been playing at Molyneux in front of 20,000, and then literally a couple of years later you're playing in front of sometimes a handful of people. You know, it must be quite, it's, I always say, it's the flip of a coin, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's a crossroads,
obviously. When you start playing football, you think you're going to play till you're 35 and make loads of money.
Yeah.
Doesn't always happen. Obviously, prime example.
I mean, but you know, in all fairness, over 200 professional games.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm not complaining.
Of course.
10 years and people, you know, give you right arm for that.
100%.
Fans. So, and especially to play for you, like I said before, for your hometown team, you know. But Warsaw's obviously a local team as well.
Yeah. And you played with another former player there, who we've had on the podcast. In fact, two, which we said Mel Eves earlier, and Colin Brace is a good mate of yours, isn't he?
Yes, yeah, lived by Colin. Obviously, he was at Warsaw with him. So that's nice now to still see him. And obviously, Mel running the All-Stars.
Yeah, we're going to come on to that, don't worry. We're going to ask you about the All-Stars. So, I mean, what jobs have you had since football, Paul? You know, in football and away from football, because I know you're a postman now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, postman now. I've been doing that for the last 14 years.
Yeah.
Like we mentioned, I was driving 7.5 tonner and assembling office furniture.
Yeah.
I worked in Chubbsy's, making safes and fireproof filing cabinets for a while.
Dean Edwards as well. He went to work at Yale.
Ah, right,
he said,
okay.
Just, yeah. So,
yeah. So, a bit of everything, really.
And you've also, how long have you been on the post?
14 years now.
14 years. Yeah. I would say, would people still recognise you? Because the avatar we're using for your podcast is when you've got golden flowing locks, Paul. And with the greatest of respect, what happened to the long blonde hair?
I don't know, mate. It's, there's only a bit of it left now, on the front anyway. But
I'm going to say that I think people remember that, obviously, when you signed for the club, because it was that.
Yeah, that. I had a you know, long curly hair with a few highlights in, so...
Yeah, that must have been the fashion back then, Jonah.
Well, yeah, the old Kevin Keegan was...
That's it.
...was in at the time, so...
But you've actually... You've got a job within football now as well, haven't you, as well as the post. What is it you do now, Paul?
Two jobs, really. One with a company called Premier League Productions, where we look after the foreign TV.
Yeah.
So when you see the interviews on Match of the Day, whoever's doing the game, whether it's BBC or Sky, who the host broadcaster, soon as they've... interviewed whatever players and the managers after the game.
Yeah.
We do the same for the foreign TV.
Okay.
Obviously sit in the fourth official's dugout, so and wired up to somebody in a truck on the car park, so it goes back to the studio in London.
Okay.
So the commentator gets everything that the cameras might not pick up. And obviously as soon as the fourth puts the card in for the substitutions, we tell them who's coming on and who's coming off before it happens, so they know.
Yes.
Anything that, you know, that happens off camera, someone might lose the boot, and the boot might come off, or they go down on the sidelines, just to give them, you know, their eyes, really, while you're there, just confirming yellow cards, red cards and goals as well.
Okay.
So, it's quite interesting.
And you do that all over the... All
mainly,
clubs.
Mainly, obviously, it's only Premier League.
Yeah.
Wolves was my first club when they were in the Premier League with Mick.
Yeah.
The first time everyone has assigned a club, so that was great for me.
Yes.
Obviously, they didn't last that long. They went down. I've done all over, really. Villa, Stoke, when they were in there. West Brom when they were in there.
Yeah.
When there's quite a few Midland clubs, so it was
great. All the local clubs, really.
Yeah. We also do another job for a company called Opta. So I do the stats at all the games.
So, on Twitter, there's accounts Opta. So, and you look at the stats sometimes and they're pretty, you know, you think, wow. So, are you literally there? And what, have you got a little clipboard of you in?
I'm talking to someone in an office in Leeds.
Yeah.
Who's putting it all into a computer.
Yeah. And what sort of stats are you?
Anything really now, because people even bet on corners.
Yeah.
So free kicks, even every throw-in.
So you have to do a report. Is it? Sort of ongoing report, is it? So you're on the phone throughout pretty much whole game.
That's it.
Yeah.
Not so much so this year, which they've just changed it because they've got pictures, but from Championship down to League Two, they didn't have any pictures when we first started. So literally we were doing, you know, every single thing, every throw in, every free kick, who plays it to who, where on the pitch it is,
yeah,
shots, where on the goal they go, what foot it is,
wow,
where on the pitch they've shot from.
So it's that in depth now, isn't it? It's just
Obviously you need to get the goal scorers right, because people bet, and if they pay out on something that you've got wrong, then not the best.
So it has to be absolutely the information has to be absolutely spot on,
because obviously clients are paying for all that information. I think the clubs themselves use it a lot as well. Obviously I know they've got their own analysts now and do lots of things, mainly nearly every club's got that, but I think it goes abroad as well with the stats. But like I say, it's not as intense now as it was, because they've got pictures to even lead to. So it's just a matter of confirming everything, really.
A
bit like PLP, where if the camera don't see anything, or if it's offside, and why is the game stopped? Just to confirm.
Yes.
Obviously confirming, making sure that yellow cards are right, and you get every single one. You don't miss anything.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but it's interesting. It still keeps me involved in the game. Mainly for Opta, I do Midlands as well, but mainly Walsall home games and Stoke home games.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you still got, so you still go down to watch Walsall, and you've still got quite a few friends at the club.
Yeah, still go down as often as I can, which has been great this year, because with them being in the Europa, I've been playing on a Sunday, with me working on a Saturday doing, you know, the football stuff.
Well, actually, you can do both.
To watch them.
You can do both Walsall and Wolves, because Wolves are playing obviously Saturdays, and Wolves are playing mainly on Sundays now, aren't they?
Yeah. So I've been down quite a lot this season, and just become a fan again, really.
Yeah.
So and the daughter's got the bug, and even the wife's been down.
Really?
Now, so.
So how long have you been married, Paul?
15, 20 years.
So. I'm just working that out then, maths wise. So was she with you when you was at Wolves?
Yes.
So obviously got married 20 years, but you've been with her longer.
Yeah.
So was she a Wolves fan as well then?
No, I met her when I was at Walsall.
Ah, okay.
So she comes from Walsall.
Yeah.
So
so you've converted the family now, so your daughter's a big Wolves fan as well?
That's it.
Brilliant.
She's got the bug now, just this season, really. Obviously, she weren't born when I was there.
Yeah.
So it's nice, yeah.
But I bet she's really proud that her dad's played for Wolves.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. She doesn't tell me, like, but...
Oh, no, they won't do. How old is she?
17.
Yeah, 17, you got now the chance. That won't be coming for another few years yet. No. So, also, Paul, you play regularly for the Wolves All-Stars. And once again, I think you're a bit of a utility there, because I know in the changing room, I was going, Jonah, centre mid, central defender. So it followed you your whole career.
That's it, even now. So
I mean, do you enjoy playing for the All-Stars?
I do, yeah. Obviously, 54 years old now. I'm probably one of the old guard.
Well.
But, I've loved it. It's been over 10 years now. So
brilliant.
Such a good, good causes, and giving something back. Like you've spoke about before with each other, it's just good to see the lads as well, and have that bit of banter in the dressing room, and
just going back. So you say about the banter in the dressing room. I mean, with the All-Stars, it is brilliant. What's the biggest thing you miss from professional football? Is it because some players clearly playing, some training? Well, not training actually, but. Is it the banter in the dressing room? Is it the playing? Is it the, what was the biggest thing you missed? What was the biggest void from it all?
Doing it every day, something that you love.
Yeah.
And getting obviously paid doing a job.
Yeah.
That you don't class as a job.
So you didn't class it, and I asked Jody Craddock this recently, you didn't class it as work?
No. Because they're doing it, straight from school, signing school bull forms, being lucky enough, taken on as apprentice. I mean, there must be that many disappointments that you don't even get took on as an apprentice.
Yeah.
They have that many, obviously there was only about five or six, and it was apprentices at the time. They have about 25, 30 YTSs now, and they've got that many to choose from. And even if you do, it was only 2 years, obviously, apprenticeship, and you do that, and you don't get took on as a professional, it must be heartbreaking. I mean, even if you dream of doing it from school and you're a YTS and you know you want to be a professional, it must be I was lucky. It must be you know what you're gonna do and what.
So did you have that chat? Obviously, you did your 2-year apprenticeship with Warsaw.
Yeah.
Was you then called into the manager's office and it was like literally a yay or nay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how it happened. Obviously, your 2-year apprenticeship.
And once again, this is the crossroads we can, you know, players can get to in terms of you say yes and you went on to have 200 games in the league. Say no, what then?
Exactly. You know, a lot of people get disillusioned. They go into, well, some even. They stop playing it altogether, which is a shame. And otherwise, they just, you know, they go.
Some just
give
up.
Get another break, and play again in the league. But man, it's like you're saying, it's non-league.
But as an 18-year-old when you got took on by Warsaw, I heard a story recently. I won't name the club or the manager, but what happened was there was a group of apprentices, and on all their social media accounts, everyone, they're nowhere near the first team, and on everyone they've got professional footballer at, they've got thousands of followers all over social media, and they had a run of games where they kept losing, and the manager sat them all down, 20 lads, and he said, I've been on all your social media profiles and every one of your profiles says you are a professional footballer at this club. He said, in 3 months time, 2 of you, I'll have that on your profile. And it's just literally cutthroat as that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's luck of the draw, really. It is. It's such a fine margin now, and I think they've got that many to choose from.
Yeah.
Like you were saying earlier, to come out of the league and then to go to non-league and find it hard to get back into the league.
Yeah.
But I mean, each year there's that many people get released.
Oh, of course.
And they've got that such a list to choose from. It's frightening, really.
It is. And, you know, say if these two players are making it, so there's 18 that aren't. So out of those 18, some will find their way back into the league. Some will make a good career in non-league, because the money can be good in non-league. And others will fall by the wayside. And there's a lot of wasted talent. But I suppose you've got to have the right, you've got to be in the right frame of mind mentally to keep driving yourself after such a setback.
Yeah, of course. I think there's more things now. I think they do academies, and there's different ex-pros that the Glenoddle thing, where they can, you know, they get a second chance where they take them and they try and get them a club. They train with them and then they get them trials at different clubs, which is a good thing now. But obviously there's none of that in my time.
And I think what's good at clubs now is there's an education program that runs alongside the football. So let's just say they do get released, which most players actually do. That's the percentages get released from their after their YTS or their academy contract, effectively. You know, at least they've got something to fall back on. But when you was 18, if the manager at the time said, "Right, Paul, thanks, but no thanks," you know, if all your eggs had been in that basket, then it you know, you could have been doing anything, couldn't you?
Of course, yeah. I'd have been like everybody else. You have to get a normal job, and that's just you know, the way of life.
But you obviously live the dream, Paul. If there's one memory in a Wolves shirt that you think about or you go back to, or your favourite, what was your favourite memory in a Wolves shirt?
Probably that day at Newcastle. It just stands out. The atmosphere, quieting the Newcastle fans, because they're really passionate.
Yeah.
Jim Smith was the manager then.
Of course, and he just lost, literally passed away,
which is a shame. Yeah. One of the fans tried to get, because obviously I hadn't come on then. I was on the bench. Tried to grab hold of him on the dugout.
Really.
Because they're so passionate up there.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And obviously going the night before and it being New Year's, it sticks out.
Yeah, brilliant. And one last question, you definitely didn't have a drink the night before then, Jonah.
No, it's been a while, mate, but not that I can remember.
Brilliant.
I was not a big drinker anyway, so...
Well, listen, Paul, you've lived the dream. You've obviously, you know, played for the club you supported as a lad. I want to thank you, and I'm sure all the listeners are going to love hearing your stories. Thanks for your time today, Paul. We really appreciate you having on the podcast, and I look forward to seeing you for the Wolves All-Star soon.
Okay, mate. No problem.
Cheers, Paul.
Cheers, Jase.